This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. You're listening to Pressing Matters, the show where we go behind the headlines and explore issues driving the press. I'm Shazana Mukhtar. The U.S. general elections take place next week on November the 3rd, and a lot of attention will be on the battleground state of Florida. Florida is one of those toss-up states that can be won by either the Democrats or Republicans. And with 29 electoral votes for the presidential candidate, it's one of the biggest jackpots in the Electoral College. Today on the show, we're featuring voices from the Sunshine State, as Florida is known, and focusing on two of the key demographics that will be decisive in determining whether the state flips Democrat or Republican. The commentaries on this show are part of a series of briefings held by the Foreign Press Centers in the run-up to the 2020 elections. Florida is an interesting microcosm of the U.S. electorate in that it has a very diverse demographic that cuts across age, ethnicity, education level, even political affiliation. Professor Brian Fonseca, director of the Institute for Public Policy at the Florida International University, sums up what makes Florida's election so closely contested.
Florida is important. It always comes down to Florida. And if I recall, if my stats are right, a Republican hasn't won a general election without carrying Florida since Calvin Coolidge, right? And so Florida becomes a really, really important. I think there's only been two Democratic presidents that have won without winning Florida. I think that was Clinton. I think that was JFK. Otherwise, Florida seems to be very predictive in terms of its ability to sort of suggest who's going to land the national election or not. What makes Florida really unique is, it's one of the largest states in the country, right? Top five. I think it's three or four in terms of total size. But it's a fairly accurate representation of the broader American electorate, right? So just over around 60% of the Florida voting population is sort of in the white space. Just over a quarter Hispanic. Just under 20% is black. And so it's a really good composition for what you're going to experience across the rest of the electorate. What's even maybe more precise is education levels that vary. Those that don't have college degrees all the way through those with sort of advanced degrees. And so, again, in many ways, whether it's age, whether it's ethnicity, whether it's education levels, Florida is a really good composite or sample for the broader American electorate. And I think that's why, election after election, Florida becomes really important in sort of a snapshot of what the rest of the electorate is going to look like as election night progresses.
One of the key demographics to watch in this election is the Latino vote. And in Florida, the Latino and Hispanic vote is by no means a monolith.
The Latino vote in Florida is fairly split. Back in 2016, Hillary took it. President Trump did better with Latinos than we thought he would. And it goes to show that, even Latinos in the United States, much like every other constituency, is not homogeneous. I mean, there's 18 or so different Latino demographics that comprise the Latino vote in Florida. Certainly the Cuban Americans overwhelm it. The Puerto Ricans are a large constituency and the rest sort of fall into the rest of the percentage. But whether it's the Puerto Ricans in the I-4 corridor up near Orlando or the Cuban Americans here, which again, polls are showing that it's neck and neck. Those demographics are a focal point for, both parties as they try to, win the state.
Curiously, though, the Trump administration's immigration policies, which have been a source of controversy over the past 4 years and which have a lot of impact on the Hispanic community, may not actually be the deciding factor for Latino voters in Florida.
It's interesting because immigration is one of those really fascinating, policy issues that you would expect more Latinos to, sort of drive more Latino outcomes. I'm not necessarily seeing that in the polling and the data. Not to mention when you think about sort of the Latino vote, you're not just talking about those that have migrated over, but you're talking about first, second, third, fourth generation born, Cuban Americans or Puerto Ricans that are here in the state of Florida. And so that changes sort of the texture of how important the immigration debate is. There are other things that are really important to Latinos, right, beyond immigration, like the economy. Right, which is again one of the top indicators that you hear, Cuban Americans. I hear it constantly here in South Florida, where I say, wait a minute. You under the, sort of the current immigration environment, you wouldn't be staying in South Florida, but they're already here. It's different, and they're still saying yes, maybe, but these other issues are just as important for me and why I'm backing President Trump going into this election, and so. I've seen from the polling and data that immigration is not, the it's an important issue, but it's certainly not the only issue that in, you know, sort of inspires the Latino vote to fall in one camp or the other.
That was Brian Fonseca of the Institute for Public Policy at FIU. We next hear from Armando Ibarra, the president of the Miami Young Republicans, on how much support President Trump has among the Latino youth in Republican circles and why.
This year, we've seen unprecedented excitement from young people. I mean, I get dozens of calls a day from people who want to volunteer. The excitement, the interest in volunteering is way above anything we've ever seen before. And I think it really reflects how excited young people in Miami, Hispanics and Latinos in Miami are to support President Trump, because he's followed through and delivered on the promises that he made to us when he came to Miami in 2016. He promised to fight for the American worker. And in his time as president, he's fought to bring back jobs from overseas. He's fought to keep to make China accountable for its abuses of the international systems and of trade. And I think that Latinos appreciate that, because many Latinos are working families or middle-class families, and they appreciate that, you know, our president is worried about their jobs and their future and taking actions that administrations before did not take. And you know, I will also say that a lot of families here, we still have family in the countries of our parents' birth. And so, you know, we also care about how policies affect them. And for us, it's really important to build a free hemisphere, a hemisphere free of socialism, because our families fled socialism in places like Cuba, Venezuela, Nicaragua, and other places in Latin America. And so when the president, as president, he's delivered on his promises to fight back against socialism in those countries. And as president, we've seen unprecedented pressure on those dictatorships. And you know, in Miami, the Republican Party is a Latino party. We're a overwhelmingly Latino party in Miami-Dade. And more we see that Latinos are coming back to the Republican Party because the Democratic Party has moved so far to the left. And I think, you know, Latinos are very patriotic. We love this country. This country has given us everything. I think that a lot of Latinos are turned off. They're offended and insulted by the things that the left is saying. And we see that more and more that's driving them to come to our offices, to want to volunteer, because they want to preserve what's made this country so great.
Armando also provides a perspective on why some Latinos are not turned off by Trump's immigration policies.
Well, look, I think it's really clear that Latinos want many of the same things that every other voter wants. They want safety and they want prosperity. And I think that Latino and Hispanic voters understand that we have to be a country of law and order, of the rule of law, and that includes also enforcing the border, just as every country, other country does. And so, you know, I think that the issue of the border also is really one and the same as the general issue of law and order. And I think a lot of Hispanics and Latinos are worried that the Democratic Party at the left is really advocating against law and order. And that's something that worries Latinos, because we want safety for our families. We want to grow up in safe communities. We want to send our kids to college. We want to prosper. But to be able to prosper, we have to have law and order. And our family saw what happens when you don't have law and order, when laws aren't enforced, but instead the ruling elite get to decide what and how it's enforced. And we've seen that in Latin America. That's what's caused so many of the problems there, and that's one of the reasons that our families fled Latin America and have been able to prosper here, is because here we're governed by laws and not by people.
That was Armando Ibarra, president of the Miami Young Republicans. We're heading into some messages, and when we come back, more perspectives on the U.S. presidential elections in Florida. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. Hello, if you've just joined us, this is Pressing Matters on The Morning Run. I'm Shazana. Americans will officially vote for their next president on Tuesday next week, and all eyes will be on the bellwether state of Florida. Florida has a history of flipping between Republicans and Democrats, and one of the key demographics is the senior vote. 20% of the Florida population is aged over 65. John McHenry, vice president of North Star Opinion Research, lays out how to read the telltale signs on election night.
President Trump needs to win Florida plus one more of these in the Rust Belt, Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, in order to win. The cheat sheet is, if President Trump hasn't won Florida, it might not be time to go to bed, but it's certainly time to brush your teeth, put on some pajamas and get comfortable and start thinking about going to bed, because it's a very tough map for him to win re-election if he doesn't win Florida. The caveat there, I would say, and those of you who remember election night in 2000, watch what the seniors have done in Florida. If President Trump is losing seniors, but they say that he's won the state, that might not actually be true by the time they count all the votes. I would be very surprised if he wins Florida while he loses those seniors. So keep an eye on what the seniors do in some of these states, as well as what the reported vote is.
That was John McHenry, a Republican pollster. The senior vote tends to lean conservative, and last year, President Trump swept the over 65 voter base by 17 points compared to Hillary Clinton. This year, however, there are signs that Trump's handling of the COVID-19 pandemic has alienated senior voters who are disproportionately impacted by the virus. Dion Polite, Director of State Operations at the American Association of Retired People, better known as the AARP, talks to us about the voters aged 50 plus in Florida and what the AARP is doing to galvanize older voters.
The 50 plus population, at least, they are the highest voting block here in Florida. You know, Florida used to be the grayest state in the country. It's now the second grayest, surpassed by Maine. Maine is now the place that has the largest number of people 50 and older. We're second. And so people are informed, right? This is a place that many people come to relax, to retire. There used to be a crazy saying about Florida's where you come to die or whatever it is. But we at AARP continue to have this messaging about your best life is still ahead of you. So people come here, they become, oftentimes in their past lives, they may not have been involved in what's happening in their community or even in their surroundings, but now they are, because they know it matters. They know that their voice, and that comes from us educating people about the process. What we are doing is also informing our voters about the steps that they need to take to remain safe. So practice social distancing. If it is that you want to actually go out to the voting polls. If you don't, we have been encouraging our members and people that are 50 and older, community at large, to vote from home, we're calling it, not vote by mail, because there seems to be some controversy when you say vote by mail. So the verbiage that we're using is vote from home. What we want to do is encourage those that have gotten their ballots, vote early, number one. Number two, if you haven't, make sure you show up to the polls equipped and ready. Have your mask on. Practice social distancing. Make sure you use wipes. Keep yourself safe. That is first and foremost.
She also elaborates on the kinds of issues that are most concerning to the 50-plus segment.
There are issues that are at hand right now that make us, sort of puts a fire in us, because it's about our livelihood. Social Security is on the line. Medicare is on the line. Prescription drug prices are on the line. And the safety of people that are in long-term care facilities, those are issues that matter to us in the 50-plus population. So we did a survey recently that showed that 50-plus folks are going to go out and vote. For sure, they're going to go out. How they're going to vote, we don't know that yet. You know, we can't tell what party is showing a higher percentage. What we do know is the person that talks the best about what they're going to do as it relates to Social Security, no cuts, as it relates to Medicare, still in place, as it relates to prescription drugs. We need the prices to go down. We need pharmas to be held accountable for people not paying $100 for one pill. And then we also need to make sure that people who have loved ones in nursing homes have the ability to be able to go and visit them. You know, right now, the facilities are not allowing that to happen. So you've got older relatives, patients, family members, neighbors, church mothers that are in facilities that the best that you can do is wave to them through a window. And it's not even like they're interacting when they're in the facility because of social distancing. They're by themselves. So people who have dementia or any other mental challenge, you know, will experience loneliness, will experience isolation at a higher percentage. And those particular issues really lead to depression and you know, sort of feeling this, why am I here? And if we can avoid that, we should, because, you know, we want people to live their best lives possible.
That was Dion Polite of the American Association of Retired People, or AARP. So Dion spoke about educating voters on the different ways they can cast their ballot. And due to COVID-19, this year's elections will see unprecedented numbers of mail-in ballots as well as early voting. Already, it's estimated that about 41% of the American population has already cast their vote. Anthony Mann, a veteran political reporter with the Sun Sentinel in South Florida, believes that whether people feel secure in the voting process will be crucial in terms of voter turnout.
I think the biggest factor is whether people are going to feel safe voting and what kind of method they think is going to be able to get them a secure, safe ballot. A lot of people think that mail voting is the way to go. There's been a huge surge of interest in mail voting. We saw that starting in our March primary, just as the pandemic was starting to become widespread. There was an increase, then a lot more increase in our state and local primary in August, and it's just exponentially grown for November. But then there are some people who don't trust the Postal Service or aren't sure that their ballot will really count if they mail it. And 99% of ballots that are mailed are counted, and everything goes smoothly. Other people are concerned about COVID if they go to the polls, and are concerned that there might be disruptions at the polls because it's such a contentious election. So I think the biggest thing is people figuring out how they feel safe and secure about their vote. There's a lot of interest in voting this year. People really are showing that they want to turn out.
That said, Anthony is also optimistic that Florida's electoral system is capable of providing an outcome on the night of the election itself.
The chances are, from what people on the right and left and neutral experts and academics say, that in Florida, it won't be a problem if the election is not ultra, ultra close. Florida has a history of very close elections. The 2000 presidential election, famously decided by 537 votes. But not just that. I mean, over the years, we've had many, many close elections. A percentage point. Donald Trump beat Hillary Clinton by 1.2% in 2016. So we have close elections. If it's a close election and there's recounting, that's where there could be chaos. But Florida has, despite its reputation, Florida has gotten pretty good at running, especially vote-by-mail elections. Florida has rules that other states don't have that allow the votes to be counted from mail-in voting starting weeks before the election. In fact, they're being counted now in a lot of counties. The ballots are opened, the signatures are checked, and they go through the tabulating machines. So if things go as they're supposed to go, and that's always a question in Florida, we probably will know sooner than many, many other states. There'll be some other big battleground states where there is no way we'll know within a day or two or three. It could be weeks, because they can't start processing their mail ballots until Election Day. Florida, the plan is for every mail ballot that has been sent in before Election Day, the plan is for that to be counted before Election Day starts. So they, unless there's a huge, huge, huge turnout on the day of voting, we should have results relatively easily.
That was Anthony Mann, political reporter with the Sun Sentinel. Here's hoping that voters in Florida are spared the agony of waiting for the results come November 4th. This has been Pressing Matters on the Morning Run. We have the 10 a.m. news bulletin coming up next, and then it's over to Enterprise. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.